Lean into Art Cast, the show where two artists get together, two visual storytellers, I should say, get together and take a walk around a challenging topic. Usually we start out with a curveball where we mentally warm ourselves up. The curveball can be supplied by the listeners or we come up with some ourselves. Then we take on the topic. We start out 1,000 feet up, deal with the topic in abstract, but we don't want to leave you guys hanging with a bunch of abstract thoughts. We want to give you something that is useful and applicable to what you are doing. So then we hit the ground in an effort to provide you with some stupid helpy tips and some actionable items that you can use to put some of these abstract thoughts into practice. My name is Jersey Drozd. That other guy is... I have my microphone swinging. I was on a roll. I had that intro locked.
You do. You did. You still do. To me.
I'm
Rob Stenzinger. The co-host of this adventure, exploring all the stuff that Jersey described, and while he swatted his microphone.
And while I'm stepping all over your introduction with my self-pity. So,
Rob. It's the big gestures. It's big emotions. We try. I don't know. We get excited, right? I mean, what are we tackling today, Jersey?
Well, before we dive into curveball and dive into topics, we got to start off with, we don't do this often. We don't, we don't use our platform to talk about the stuff that we make beyond Lean Into Art all that often. So I'm going to be indulgent and say, I saw you on the TV last night.
All right. Yeah. That's cool. You caught that, huh?
I caught it. I watched you make an appearance on rather Ryan Estrada's Asking for Trouble game show again.
Exactly. It was a big band of losers. Which is why you weren't on the show, even though there were returning guests. But of course, it wasn't the winners coming back. It was all of us who, were sent home without the honors.
Yes. I'm sitting here on my laurels right now. God, I'm comfortable.
Yep. Big neck of gold, gold medals and all that.
Now, I don't want to spoil it. I don't want to spoil the episode and reveal whether or not you redeemed yourself on your follow-up appearance on Asking for Trouble. But you do show up at about like around the 15-minute mark. I mean, you're in there, but like your round happens in the 15-minute, 20-minute mark. We'll put a link in the show notes at leanintoart.com for this episode, episode 74. So you can watch Asking for Trouble. It's a fun show. And I mean, aside from getting to see Rob do his best to answer trivia questions about about This American Life.
And those that know me know my affinity related to that topic. And so you'll be like, oh, Rob got that? Or you'll be like, Rob got that?
Yeah.
Up to you.
So you watch, it's both fun because you watch Rob struggle with this, but then also it's just, I think, it's one of the most creative and fun uses of Google Hangouts that can be found out there.
I was, what was really funny, and it didn't seem to derail the show much, how a lot of times Google Plus, you'll have the primary window of essentially whoever is talking is typically what, who's getting the big picture, right? But then there's however many guests. There's a set of panels below the big window. And so we're all hanging out. And all of a sudden, some of us start doodling and holding things up to the camera while we're waiting because it was a big panel. It was like, what, 6 contestants or something? Or I don't know. So anyway, there's some fun doodles and like little essentially multiple streams of bonus content happening at the same time as the main show. Once in a while, giggling or distracting from the main show. But for the most part, it's just ambient.
At one point somebody makes a paper mustache and beard and applies it to their face and begins talking in an accent. And yeah, you're right. It reminded me of that scene in Back to the Future 2 where Marty McFly's kid goes up to the wall of televisions and says, give me channel 26, 52, the sports channel, this channel, and they're all playing at once. And, like back in the 80s when that movie came out, we're like, that is excessive. But there I was watching it on Ryan's show with like all these little streams of different people doing different things while the main body of the content was going on. Cool show, Asking for Trouble. People should watch it.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
And you should watch it and root for Rob.
Exactly.
Maybe go ahead.
You know what? You can root for me just yelling at your computer anytime, actually. But you can just tweet me, let me know too. So I'm at Rob Stenzinger.
But I know
you're yelling at your computer.
It was a valiant effort, Rob.
Thanks, man.
So, but then the other thing I wanted to throw out at the top end of this is that I just released another Saturday Supercast, a show that I produce and update intermittently. It has by no means has an update schedule, but this latest one is an hour and 20 minutes about the ALF cartoon series. And as I was finishing editing it, because I recorded it months ago, maybe a month ago, and when I finished editing it, I was like, this is pretty funny stuff that we're talking about here. We got into some weird nerdy areas. And so that's at sugarycereals.com/SSC33. We'll be linked in the show notes as well. If you're looking for something a little bit, we talk about two entertaining things, but also, you know, like part of one of the themes that we've explored on this show in the past is this idea of analyzing what you love to try to pin down why, what it is, like, so you can sort of, put it over the Bunsen burner and break it down to what its different caloric intake is and what chemicals are in there. So then you can maybe apply it to your own work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. Anything else that you're doing right now that you wanted to tell people about, Rob?
No, not really. Just doing a lot of toiling in obscurity.
You and me both.
We'll see. I mean, stuff are happening, but nothing to share yet.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll wait for that. And maybe we can get you to make some hints about it. With that, I'm going to kick over to Curveball. I'm going to actually use a music segue for it this time because we've never front-loaded anything before Curveball. So, and this Curveball is a scary one, hence the scary music.
Yes.
Can we beat it? Is this question too difficult?
Will
we be destroyed by a million guns bristling out of a spaceship that looks like a gherkin?
No way.
Go, Rob, go. That's what Shadow Wingtronics is saying in the chat.
It's the Robotech theme music stuff. It gets me pumped. Anyway.
Yeah, no, me too.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention my post on Google Plus about my three favorite Android drawing apps, which I'll put in the show notes and we'll mention maybe at
cool.
the end if we have time. Yeah, I did a really long post in Google Plus. I didn't think it was that long until I hit the post button and I was like, oh, anyway, we got a curveball. We said we're going to do curveball. Let's do curveball. This comes from Lee of Control Alt Lee on the Twitters, twitter.com/Control Alt Lee. And this is revisiting something we've talked about a little bit in the past, but I love it when we get these where it's like, okay, let's put a prism on it. Let's look at it from a new angle. See how it breaks apart this way. Tribe finding, right? And he says, can misidentifying your tribe initially hurt your career/personal projects? I keep following people who do what I do/what I want to do. But it feels like high school all over again with me not fitting neatly into any cliques. I feel like I must not be understanding what a tribe is or how to find mine. What if a tribe doesn't exist for someone? What if they're too unusual? And he submitted that via the contact form on leanintoart.com where you can go and submit your own curveballs for us to tackle. I suspect, Rob, this was my prediction at the top of this episode, this is going to wind up permeating a lot of the discussion today. It's going to trickle down and we're going to wind up rounding back on this one over and over again. But I'll let you start with this question. Or do you want to start by deconstructing the question?
I like the idea of deconstructing the question because I think it's predicated on something that all of us have a lot of assumptions about, and we can skip over the important distinctions inside of it. And I think it's just the word tribes, and what do we expect about it? What is a tribe? And this isn't, my intent is not to take Control Alt Lee's question and just spin it into some pedantic, you know, crazy, you know, turmoil. It's just that it's actually out of respect for the question where I see, and I felt like this before too, of course, certainly like, for instance, reaching out to different webcomic artists, right? for, let's see. So when I started Art Geek Zoo in about 2008 and what, February 2008, roughly about a year later, I was out in, it's in Massachusetts. It's the Webcomics Weekend where that, the first one took place. And it was almost like this weird, I don't know, I've obvious, Woodstock happened before I was born, right? I'm not quite that old. But it felt like an event like that for people with a lot of common interests. And I mean, I've been to conventions before with, you know, like Gen Con, actually a bajillion years ago at Gen Con, back when it used to be in Wisconsin. But it had this amazing feel, yet in the midst of all that incredible, and this is in a physical place, right? This isn't just being on Twitter and Google Plus and all that, reaching out to people. It was hard. It felt hard to make connections in the midst of that. And I think it was something around that time when I started to try to find out and peel away more at, like, well, it's not just showing up, or is it, right? Because how I define showing up, and this is where I'm getting toward the definition of tribe, how is different than how other people define showing up. Other people define showing up as having, for instance, the same college background as they, right? Other people define showing up as, you're someone who put out your webcomic for about 5 years or more before this date and have an archive of, you know, thousands, right? And it's, everyone defines this differently. So, like, invisible.
What is the definition of being vested, right? For those of us who have waited for something to be vested in our retirement account, I've worked a lot of different jobs and I've had a lot of different kinds of IRAs and 401ks. And at this job, you got to work here 7 years before you're vested and you can get all the benefits that come with being part of this job. Other jobs, like, oh, 6 months, 6 months, and then you're in. You know, we know you're not going
anywhere. Exactly. Because they know you're probably want to stay. Those 7 year ones are like, no way.
but the point is, I'm trying to make a clumsy metaphor for this idea of everybody has their own definition of what means, what is required to prove that you are in, that you are trustworthy, that you are somebody that they can engage and trade with, right?
Exactly. And so, what happens when you are recognized as a member of the tribe? What do tribe members do for one another? What are their customs and how do they, because it's not just a one-time thing. So you do get, if you get recognized by a tribe, chances are that's like a very early stage of a far longer process of connecting with them. And I'm not saying, it's not like everyone's trying to prevent everyone from getting into their group or whatever. This happens for people who do want to prevent others from getting in, but then it happens even in groups that are inclusive because people are busy and you know, they're doing their thing for the other members of the tribe. And this,
yeah,
you know, this is extra work to let new members in.
Yes. And especially the more well-known the person, right? The more valuable their time is to themselves and to their constituency, right? And there is, it's a busyness, but there's also like a self-protection thing that comes into play where, I don't know if you've had this experience, Rob, but I've been in situations where I meet somebody for the first time, and I'm not talking about at conventions, I'm talking about just, this is general life stuff. I meet somebody and I start talking with them and they seem they're kind of excited about things and I'm kind of excited about things. And then all of a sudden I bring up this one thing that I'm just extremely passionate about. This is near and dear to my heart. This is a ultra important concept to me. And they go, oh, that's crap. Oh, I hate that thing. Oh, everything about that and all the people surrounding it are terrible people who should be, you know, strung along behind cars on gravel roads for hours on end. And then I go, whoa, I just invested, you know, 30 minutes talking to this person before I found this out, right? So by necessity, you know, it's a necessity that we have to, you know, sort of create little thresholds in our engaging in trade with somebody to find out if we're even on the same page, right?
Yeah. And so now, okay, engaging in trade. So people recognizing each other, and you have the potential of starting to connect with a tribe, but then the engaging in trade, what are you trading? Initially, probably isn't, maybe it's you engage that someone in that tribe in a service arrangement, right? So you buy art from an artist or a book, or you get a book signed. Or perhaps you're just exchanging ideas. I've had exchanges on Twitter with folks in the webcomics community that are, you know, I would notice, like, someone would mention, oh yeah, I got stuck with this thing or whatever. And if I happen to, you know, have a helpful thought on that, I would just tweet it. And, you know, that just showing that I care about this tribe, and that's often my approach. You know, when I have the bandwidth to do it, I would actually do like little swoops through my Twitter history years ago, off and on, and just start answering questions. And
I saw on the topic of this kind of, like, you know, filtering through your tribes. I don't know if tribes is a bad word to use or not, but I saw a tweet somebody retweeted from a stand-up comic. And it ran, I can't quote it because I don't remember who it was from, but the gist of it was kind of a joke about people at tweeting them after they make a joke, trying to add on to their joke or change the punchline in order to get their attention at how clever they are, right? So in other words, that was a very clumsy way of saying, like, here's Rob, he just told a joke online, and then I at tweet Rob with my own version of the joke. Here's my own addition to the punchline. Wink, wink, Rob. Rob doesn't know who I am, but now he's going to like me. And this comedian was kind of saying it in this kind of tired, dismissive way of, yeah, guys, when you're doing that, that's what it comes across as to me. And when I read that tweet, I remember thinking, gosh, that's kind of harsh, because that's people who really want to connect with you. But then I also thought, yeah, but if you're getting that 1,000 times a day, you know, that's going to wear on you, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense.
Now I feel like I want to find that tweet.
I have a hunch. I was wondering, this may not be accurate, but was that Chris Straub?
Oh, no.
Oh, okay. It reminds me a little bit of it has echoing similarity to some of the themes in your interview with him on the Comics Are Great show.
Oh, we did talk a little bit about that, and I don't remember what episode that was. It was like episode 73, I think. So CAG 73, comicsaregreat.com, CAG 73. So sorry.
Okay, cool. And there's so many different behaviors related to tribes.
And okay, I got it. It was Bill Corbett. Sorry, I'm going to put this in the show notes. It's Bill Corbett. Do you know who that is? I don't know who that is.
Sounds familiar.
And it's in quotations. I'm going to take your joke and show you how I would have written it better because I want you to like me, Twitter. So, right. Anyway, continue your thought. I'm sorry, Rob. I was delighted that I found it so quickly.
Actually, that's pretty stunning. Did you favorite that or something?
Nope.
How in the world? Whoa.
I'm not going to reveal my investigative techniques.
Okay. Wow. that is incredibly skilled. Let's see. So putting pause on that, and I'm stepping toward something another thing that strikes me about tribes is they're a nexus point in a way, right? And so what's connecting us? What's connecting the members that are already a part of that tribe? What's connecting you to them? Like, why are you, is it an idea? Is it a cause? A common interest, right? Where there's some pretty loose, think of a convention then. Okay, so pick Gen Con or pick, what's the PAX or I don't know what would be, yeah, any
Comic-Con, San Diego, right?
There you go. Exactly. Comic-Con. There's going to be so many that you're part of this greater entity, right? You're involved, but then there's so many things within that, right? I mean, so I don't know. That's where I think I like the idea of tribes, because one thing it does is it humanizes the idea of how we're interconnected in a way that you can start to make it manageable, mm-hmm. and breaking it down like we've been trying to break it down. So I'm not proposing throwing it out, but it is a it's not a perfect metaphor, basically, for how we're interconnected and then the complexities of it. Because it also in some ways makes it sound like some groups have there's nothing central that controls the weather, right? There's nothing they can have flocking behavior where there's reaction to stuff, like when birds fly around or whatnot, but I don't know. There isn't necessarily always a one that's in control. There isn't like a hierarchy in every tribe. So let's see. Yeah, I see Jersey pulled up this on screen. How to talk to an artist.
I don't know if you can even see this on there. This is from milkyday.tumblr.com, MILKDAYY. Let's see if I can make it bigger. Here we go. So, and this is how to talk to an artist. And this is not, by no means, this is an endorsement of this, but it made me think of this, that this got passed around on Tumblr recently.
If you hit control plus in your browser, sure. You should be able to zoom in on the page.
Is that any better?
And there's a delay. Yep. Wow. Yes.
Better? Okay.
Yes.
So yeah, we got, you know, and again, I want to give attribution, milkyday.tumblr.com. And we'll link to this in the show notes if you're interested in reading it again. But, you know, here's you. This person seems really cool and I admire their work. I'd love to talk to them and maybe become friends too. And then it gives you three options to follow. You know, and this is where people had issues with it, because it's like kind of oversimplifying, you know, excessively modest, speak too formally, avoid anything even marginally offensive, or you're overzealous, overly desperate, tries to appeal to artists' interests at inappropriate times, or casual, treat artists as you would any other regular individual, be genuine. And it shows the results of and some of the behavior patterns and what it does to the artist when upon, you know, approaching them in these manners. And what people had problems with is something that we've kind of railed against on the Lean Into Art show as well, is this idea of a recipe, right? People fall into three categories. But this is something that, you know, people run into at shows, right?
Yeah, definitely. What this is starting to get at also is it's interesting. So this isn't necessarily you have some interesting show notes in this episode, which I really dig. So we aren't necessarily following the exact, you know, format as we have been since, well, roughly what, January?
Yeah.
But yeah, there's some ideas in here that may show up later, related to self-perception, psychology types of concerns, right? Where think about the what this comic says about the artist who created it, right? They're putting out what they hope to run into. That's cool. I don't really honestly know where I was going with that.
That's just, okay.
I think I just... Yeah.
The initial point before I kept interrupting you was that when we were talking about Bill Corbett, who, by the way, Shadowingtronics is in the chat, and he's saying, is that the guy from MST3K/Rift Trax? Yes, indeed. You're right. I just checked on his Twitter feed, and right. Bill Corbett is the guy from MST3K. So he's a well-known comedian. And when I told that story, you said, you know, there's a lot of different ways to engage with people, and there's a lot of different ways people react to things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what the takeaway is there. In the case of the Bill Corbett thing that I was responding to, is I you know, for better or worse, I saw both sides of it. I saw a bunch of people who wanted to connect and engage with the guy, and I saw a guy who was beleaguered by a lot of interactions, falling into a sort of a pattern, and he made a joke out of it. you know, and maybe it was a loving joke, maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I don't know the guy.
It's very similar, making a comic and telling a joke about it. I mean, whatever, those are great outlets. I am not trying to, you know, cast any dispersion on either of those artists. It's the, I think it's important to think about, well, what do you want out of that tribe? Why are you trying to connect to them? And that giving them that importance does cause sort of a, some kind of feedback loop, right? Where, you may have great motivation for reaching out, but they may not be in a place where they want to be reached. And both motivations are completely fine, but there's going to be conflict when you combine them.
Nicely said. Right. I mean, it could be a bandwidth issue, could be a grumpiness issue. It could be, you know,
yeah, like some people are just dicks.
Yeah, you know? Sometimes. And I'm not saying that about this guy in particular, this Bill Corbett guy. Like I said, I don't know him. But yeah, that does happen where some people have bad interactions with somebody because they're just a jerk. You and I have both met our share of jerks at Comic Cons.
Totally. And what's so funny, like going back to the that first, nowadays, I'm like a fourth path more so. I try to find what can I do to help. That's my default thing. What can I do to help? Because I guess I want to be needed or some kind of crap. But I was definitely the nervous or the silent whatever path when I was. It was funny. Like literally, have I mentioned this on the show that essentially I was too shy when I went to Web Comics Weekend to walk up to Krishna Sadasivam? Of all people, like seriously. It's not like he showed up in a limo and was all like, I have no time for any of you. He's the most approachable, kind man. And anyway, whatever. So.
No, he totally is. Yeah, that's the funny thing. Anybody who knows Krishna knows how funny that story is. Because, yeah, he's like the sweetest dude ever.
Yeah.
It's difficult to get the guy to say anything negative about anything.
That's true. Yeah.
I'm just writing it down for the show notes.
Oh yeah, cool. The let's see, where was I going with that? Okay, and so there's another complexity here too. In you're not always the same fan every time, right? You know, you're having different days, they're having different days, and there's a continuity thing. So it actually is good to keep showing up. I mean, maybe it's a rainy day and no one in the tribe is present, or maybe everyone's busy doing, you know, something else that the tribe already had planned. That's where, like, for me, I started to puzzle it out. Like I started thinking of it as a, what does this tribe value? Am I really into that? The more I get it, you know, the more I become aware, because I've actually Control Alt Lee mentions, like, it started to feel like high school all over again. Well, in high school, like what is the exclusivity? What's bringing you all together there? And it's because your parents all chose to live in the same place. It doesn't mean you all care about anything in common.
Right.
It's pretty, you're pretty much, you know, that's step removed from you, and you're just, you know, doing the best you can. And,
But then littler groupings form, right? So like, yeah, when I got into high school, I met the kids who were all really into Spider-Man and Ninja Turtles and role-playing, and I wound up hanging out with those kids.
Yeah, pretty much the same for me too.
Okay, so here's the thing, Rob. I think about when I was, and I don't want to belabor this too long, because I want to get to some of these other points that we have listed in the notes, but
cool.
When I went to a different high school in 10th grade, so like from K through 9th grade, I was at one school, small school, very insular, you know, 25 kids in the class, little house in the prairie kind of place. And then I go to a bigger school where there's like 250 kids, still small, but bigger by a substantial margin from what I was used to. And I'm dropped into this place. I know nobody. And now I'm walking the halls, you know, and it's like, well, and that's the situation where it's like, I opened up a Twitter account and I start following some people. watching the discussions happen, and they're all talking about this stuff. I'm not even sure what all these conversations are. What are they referring to then? Like, it's like when I start downloading like a new podcast by somebody and they start referring to their friends by their last name. I love that trick where they're like, oh, I was talking to Brooks and Brooks said this to me, and yeah, that's Brooks for you. And, you know, it's like, it's almost, but you know, but then again, like, this is where I see all sides of it, is like, that's paying, that's a service to your existing tribe, because they know who Brooks is, and that's, they're on the inside on that, but that keeps people on the outside, right?
Tribes love their shared distinct languages.
Yeah.
That's valuable because you feel connected. Connected is a pretty awesome, helpful thing. And yeah, anyway, please continue.
Oh no, but so it's very, the experience was, I'm reminded of that a lot, like when I was reading Lee's email. But yeah, I remember like the first kids I started hanging out with there were not the kids I wound up being good friends with for the rest of my high school years, right? Mm. I had to figure out where do I fit in here? Because like there was this really nice guy who I started hanging out with, and then he's like, oh, you should come out to my house sometime. And I go to his house, and okay, anybody who's been listening to the show, I'm going to try to be anti-tribal here and say anybody who's been listening to the show for a long time knows this about me, but I'm explaining it for people who are new to the show, is that I am a big child who loves cartoons, kids shows. I intentionally on purpose watch preschooler television, and I don't have kids of my own, right? So like, you know, I can watch things like Word Girl on PBS and really enjoy it. And so then I'm invited to this guy's house, and he's like, oh, come on in. And he's got, you know, a huge Fangoria collection, the magazine about horror films. And he's, mm-hmm. he's practicing. He's like, oh, I do art too. I make latex scars, and I'm trying to get, like, make a thing where my face will be all mutilated. Nice guy. But he was into stuff that I did not care about at all. You know, there was nothing to connect us out of the fact that he was nice and I was nice. You know, and so I didn't wind up hanging out with that guy a lot until I found the people where there was the shared interests and shared goals and so on. Mm-hmm. But the point is, the point I'm trying to drive at here is that, isn't that a little bit what it's like too? And trying to, there's a little bit of like heuristics, a little bit of trial and error, trying to like figure out intuitively.
Holy moly, yes. You really. You meet who you meet. You start to connect with who you connect. You know, chances are, the first person you connect with doesn't necessarily become your life partner, right? And especially, so you mentioned, and put this in the context of like interesting new technologies like Twitter and, you know, social networks and all that stuff. Yeah, I think a lot of the social dynamics still apply where there's still people looking to connect with other people for whatever reasons, but you still end up going through that. Like, even if you do start to connect and it feels awesome because, we're humans, we want to, you know, see and understood and be acknowledged by one another. That may not be enough to really get you to where you want to go in life and be the kind of experience you want to have commonly in your life. So, the first tribe you connect with may not be, or the first group you recognize as a potential tribe mm-hmm. to connect with.
Yeah, because then there's the story that I've told in the show before, and I'll just do the 2 second version. Campus organization said, we're going to get together and make a comics anthology. Boy, oh boy, 18 years old, that sounded like exactly where I wanted to be until I got mm-hmm. there and realized that their mission was very different than that. So, go back to our archives and you can find the whole story. But you talked about acknowledgement, and this is where I want to get on some one of the other talking points that we had listed here, because there Sweet. Was a, man, it was, it's just so timely that Lee sent this email, because just yesterday I was watching a TED Talk by Dan Ariely, What Makes Us Feel Good About Our Work. It's a pretty good talk, actually. One of the better ones.
I dug his book. Did he do Predictably Irrational?
Oh, is that the same guy?
Yeah.
Oh, funny. Because, yeah, his talk is all about, like, motivation. What motivates us? What makes us feel good about the stuff that we're doing? And the front end of his talk is mostly about Sisyphean tasks, right? Like you push the boulder up the hill and then it rolls back down. And then like, at least if he would have had multiple hills to roll it up and over, there'd be a sense of accomplishment. But the more futile something feels, the less inclined you are to do it, right? But the one that really grabbed me was where he starts talking about motivation in terms of some experiments that he ran, or he and his team ran, where students were asked to find letter pairings on a sheet of paper. They give them a sheet of text, just all text running. And it's like, whenever you see two letters, two of the same letters together, circle it, right? And he offers them money. It's like, get a buck for finishing a sheet of paper. And then after they finish one, it's like, well, now we'll offer you 75 cents. And then they progressively get to be lower amounts. And the trick is, they're trying to figure out motivation here. It's like, when is it not worth it to them, right? So like when it's a nickel, it's no longer worth it. I'm not going to spend that much time doing this for a nickel. And then the experiment was broken into three study groups, where the first group, you do your letter pairings, you turn in your sheet of paper, and the person looks at it, gives it a cursory glance, and then sets it down on the table. Second group, they don't even look at it. They just take the sheet of paper from you and turn it face down on a pile. In the third group, the results were shredded right in front of you, not even looked at. They didn't even look at it. They just shredded it, destroyed the work that you did. And boy, man, that's how life feels sometimes, right?
Oh, man.
did I just sucker punch you out?
you did, man. It's bleak but true. I've tasted that bitter.
I'm a happy
sandwich.
Guy, and that's how life feels to me sometimes. So, but yep. Anyway,
I think that's what hit me too. It's like that came from Jersey. It's like I don't know. Anyway, it's like when Robin Williams started doing serious acting. It's like, oh wow. More impact. Anyway, so.
Lee's in the chat watching us. Yeah, he says, today's Lean Into Art cast is awesome, and I totally had the same comic club experience in college as Jersey. Well, I don't know whether to feel good or bad about that, Lee. I mean, on the one hand, it's nice to know that I'm not alone in my suffering, but on the other hand, it's like, that sucks that happened to other people.
So, yeah, I mean, again, like, it's not like every relationship you have is awesome. So you start to figure out the things that you prefer and what works for you. And I don't even know how you would figure that out. It's not like someone can just explain that to you. And it's very, there's so much experience and emotion in that kind of thing.
And chance, right?
True.
But anyway, to finish this little thing about the TED Talk is that, so like, okay, what were the results, right? Who quit the soonest of those three groups? And the first group quit at around, like they started out at, I don't know, like a buck or something, but then they went through progressively until it got down to about a nickel or 15 cents, I think. Mm. 15 cents was the point when they said, no, it's no longer worth it. And this was the group where they got acknowledgement for the work. And then the third group, it was like very early on. It's like, you know, like two or three steps in, they're like, no, I'm not doing this. I'm not going to do this thing. So watch somebody just shred the work I do. And the funny thing was that is, as Ariely points out, is he says, like, in the third group, they could be cheating. They could be not doing the work at all and just collecting the money because they know it's not being looked at. Yet the simple notion of the futility of the situation was enough to make them say, I don't want to do it. And suddenly comes the second group and he's like, well, what do you think they landed at? It turns out that being ignored, the group that got ignored, not shredded, but just not paid attention to, they quit around the same time as the group that shredded, that got their work shredded. And so his takeaway is that ignoring performance is almost as bad as shredding it. Being ignored is almost as bad as watching the effort you put into something get destroyed. And then conversely, he tries to walk away with a positive notion, is that a little acknowledgement goes a long way. Right. And this totally jives with my pedagogical style, right? Like acknowledging what the effort was and then pushing them in the positive direction. But anyway, what were you going to say, Rob?
I don't know where it ends. Like the applicability of that may be like the super glue of of all relationships. Right. I mean, it's very useful in all sorts. Well, I mean, I don't know. Super glue, you got to be careful. When I used to wear glasses, I would, you know, anyway. Glue them to my hands by accident and whatever. And then you get the super glue, you know, it's got that intense aroma that would make my eyes water. Anyway. But more to the acknowledgement, it's what's better than super glue? That's clear. But I've realized I've been doing this lately with emails and feedback with, I might have even done it with you lately, like maybe not in recent weeks, depending on timing and whatnot, but like when I'm working on someone, like, you know, like even like in day job stuff, I notice how a lot of times people put a lot of work into making some piece of communication, right? And that then the gist of the result is sometimes just one extreme acceptance or accept pass fail in the end, where maybe it's a pitch that succeeds or a pitch that doesn't succeed and it's pass fail. But along the way, like we're all, you know, people can be collaborating on this thing and they could be commenting on it, right? And then in the commenting, in the collaborating or critique, right? Even there's acknowledgement in there. And I've noticed like that builds stronger relationships. And I think in some ways I do it now, just looking, spinning this. I'm not trying to make it about me, but this is how
You're
just
using
sharing
your
my process.
Life as an example to build your point. Yeah.
It's not just that, but also then I literally look at myself and ask, well, why am I doing this?
Yeah.
And I like when collaborative groups have a strong sense of purpose and trust and are feeding into making one another better. Mm. So someone can trust that I will thoughtfully observe and respond to a thing. And like, I noticed like that all of a sudden, like not like things were going badly and then instantly better, but like then you can, I don't know, how do you sense when there's more trust? But yeah. I feel like the trust meter went up.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
You know it when it's there, though. When I have a successful classroom, that's there.
Yeah.
And when I have a less successful classroom, I know it as well. And I mean, there's like symptoms, right? You get somebody who's acting out, somebody who's like being a little disruptive because they want attention, they want their stuff honored, and they want everybody else to think they're the funniest kid in the room. Mm-hmm. Or you get kids who just become disinterested in what they're doing, right? They get bored and they just push the thing they're working on aside and they don't participate. But when everybody's when there's that trust in the room, not only are the kids all engaged with the thing, but they're supportive of one another in the sense of not in the CBS after school special kind of like, you did good and I'm glad you did good. Thank you. That makes me feel good. It's in the sense of they're just genuinely excited and feeding off of one another. Like, oh, you know, it'd be really great in that if you added this. And they're like, yeah, that would be great. You know, that's.
See, it's not the absence of challenge that makes it better. Like it's not like it's just all, you know, happy, happy, joy, joy. Everyone's, you know, slapping smiley face stickers on everything and doing high fives. It's like there could be, you know what? I think what would make this better, and this could just be me, is what if it was, what if the hero failed first, right?
Yeah.
Or something like that. And then all of a sudden you're having a dialogue with someone that is acknowledging your work and they've absorbed it enough to be caring and commenting and having an exchange.
Yeah.
And of course, it depends. Like if that's welcome, I mean, you're making that connection.
Right. Right.
Through acknowledgement.
Through acknowledgement. Now, I want to kind of build out on this and spin this a little bit, because I think what this also models, this talk and what he's talking about models for this particular topic, is part of the search for the tribe is you want a sense of acknowledgement. I want a sense of acknowledgement. When I put a thing on Instagram, it makes me feel good when somebody hits that like, when somebody goes, I liked it. You know, I know it's a relatively meaningless act. It does not put money in my bank account. It does not enrich my relationship with people who are personally in my life. But it's a little bit of a quick endorphin pump, right? Somebody looked at that thing and said, ding, I like that thing, right? I want acknowledgement like anybody else. And but then flip it again and talk about that acknowledgement. That's also part of the currency that helps you build trust, is acknowledging what other people do. In a variety of ways. Now let's go back to the Bill Corbett tweet. Is like, is it acknowledging and honoring what he did to say, that was funny. Here's what I would add to it, right? Or is that overstepping a sort of cultural boundary, right? It was like the first time when somebody approached me as if they knew me and I didn't know them. It was the first time where I felt like, oh, this is what like famous people must experience all the time. When that guy came up to me at the Miami Book Fair and said, hey, remember that time when you did blah, blah, blah? And he was reciting a story from my life that I talked about on one of my shows. And I looked up and I was like, who are you? You know, it was weird, right? Because he was familiar with me, but I wasn't familiar with him. And there was a sort of what's the word for it? A cultural norm? Is it a norm? Or is it just like an unspoken agreement that...
He insulted your tribal honor is what happened.
Yes, and I punched him.
No. I think it has to do with you... In both situations, there isn't the mutual acknowledgement, right? Where in the context in which I was providing that feedback, the first time that I did it, I provided less feedback to see if that was welcome.
Yeah.
And I had enough context to believe that it was okay to provide that feedback at the very least, because it pertained to something that what my role in the tribe.
Yep.
So I thought, well, I think this would represent, you know, this concern a little bit more accurately or what have you. And so, yeah, even then, I guess it's not a one-time thing, and it's a matter of knowing what's as best as you can know. Do you have reason to believe that it's mutually acceptable? Because so like the comedian Bill Corbett, right? The Bill Corbett, is that?
Yeah, I believe so.
And he probably didn't view those tweeters as peers.
Right.
But I would bet he'd be willing to take notes from, you know, one of his riff tracks, coworkers.
And this comes into that whole high school clique thing. Because like when you go on to these different social sites and you see these people who you may have respect for and they're having a conversation with other people. And I see this happening all the time. And I'm not making any value judgment either way. People you can use. Guess what? We get to use these things any way we feel like. Just don't do illegal things and don't do hateful things. Those are the only recipes I throw out at people. But I see people who are like three different well-known cartoonists I know who will be having a conversation, which really kind of feels like a private conversation that they're just letting us listen in on, you know?
Yeah.
And you see that happening. It's like, well, is this something I can participate in and engage in? Or is this something where I'm just supposed to sit back and watch? Because they're kind of talking about their lives. They're talking about projects that they're not being really clear on what exactly they're talking about. They're using some kind of tribal language here that I'm not privy to.
Well, right? There's cues, right? I mean, there's some cues. So, I mean, I would say that, let's see. So Bill Corbett provided a cue, right? He's like, this isn't how you collaborate with me, essentially. So not all feedback is positive, right? Maybe it's possible for some subset of those people. Perhaps there is, I would imagine someone like, maybe he, I just actually pulled up his Wikipedia. He was Crow the Robot's voice, and that's, so I knew it. Yeah, it
must have been in either an early or a late season, because I thought that was Trace. What's his name? Dr. Clayton Forrester played Crow when I was watching it. But that,
oh, during later seasons. Oh, okay, funny. Okay.
Oh, excuse me, Rob. I'm afraid I must correct you while you read the Wikipedia article. Sorry, I didn't mean to be that guy.
All right. Well, yeah. As always, I am out triviaed. So.
spoilers, Rob. Spoilers.
No spoilers. I don't know whatever that pertains to. I'm just yeah. I had a Linus moment. All right.
Anyway. Yeah. But yeah, he put out a cue, right? And so
yeah. So in person, so you're gonna pick up on something like, well, what people will physically turn their shoulder away from you, right? What's funny is, yeah, there was actually, you know, different bar outings during there was a whole bar hop thing for that for the first webcomics weekend. And if you haven't heard about it, I think the website's still up.
I'll link to it in the show notes.
Yeah. And so it was kind of neat. It was like, oh man, I met the creators behind Darwin Carmichael. What? Oh, Darwin Carmichael Must Go to Hell or something. Really cool strip that I've checked in off and on. I think it's ending soon or has recently ended, like just finally, like in recent, you know, recent weeks here. Very cool, very funny. And there were a lot of people who were looking to say, hey, you know, we're into this too and whatever. It was obvious when some people wanted to socially connect. It was obvious when some people were more there for business, where they were like, you know, I'm a writer up, you know, boom, here's my business card and, you know, looking to partner. And if it's like, well, yeah, I'm not really looking for what, and all of a sudden they just poof, disappear. Cause they're like, we're not on the same page and I'm on a mission. See you. And there's cues, right?
Yeah. Anyway. I've had my opinion of somebody do a complete 180 in a positive way, where my first interaction with them was very businessy and I was like, oh, you just want to trade business cards. Oh, that makes me sad. And then they did something that was like very, you know, tied into my personal missions. And I was like, oh, I love you. You're the best. You're a great person. I love you. You know, but yeah. Yeah. And so anyway, I don't know where we're going with all those cues.
Cues. I don't know. Yeah. It's anyway, the connections and there's some themes between these different topics.
This is the closing. I want to talk about this being aware of our psychology thing a little bit. And then we got to get to closing out this discussion with talk about Kazu Kibuishi's tweet. And I'm saying it so that we cannot avoid talking about it because I thought it was brilliant.
Yep. You have burned the ships.
So when we look at this talk by Dan Ariely, what the question I was saying was like, okay, what does this tell us about finding our tribes or groups or social circles or whatever, like whatever groups that we want to do more trade with? And when I say trade, and I think this is what you mean, Rob, when you say trade, you mean trade means a lot of things. It doesn't just mean exchange of business. It means exchange of ideas, exchange of friendship, exchange of respect, regard, anything where there is something being transmitted from a person to a person. And one of the things that you'll see in his talk, if you guys go ahead and go to TED.com and find this or follow the link in the show notes and watch this talk, it's 20 minutes. It's a great talk. He says, it's harder for others to see the value in our work. There's a big section in there where he talks about the difference between the value. He says, I think the example he uses is like, how much would you sell your children for? Right. And it's like, you look at them and you see all of this life history surrounding this person, you know, you birth to like you know, they skin their knee and to the time when they when she sang after she got hurt at a party, and you know, all of these memories get tied up in this person and all this work that you put into this person, you value them very high. But if you meet a kid, like the example used, which was really, I thought, a very funny and strange example, was you meet some kids who are just like your kids, but they're at the park and you play with them all day, and then you're like, oh, it was fun playing with you kids, and the parents say, oh, by the way, they're for sale.
Yeah, bit of an awkward example, but yeah.
But yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. You highlighted this. I'll let you quote this. This is great.
Oh, well, okay. This isn't quite the. I suppose this did come out of. He did say this after the kid thing, but the quote is. To me, I heard webcomic when he was saying it. So, anyway, when we look at things of our own creation, we don't see that others don't see things our way. Yeah. And that, honestly, that's how I get paid to do user experience, because gaining that perspective can be it can be really hard. And especially when we have so much attachment to the thing that we built, and we can love it perfectly, and even if we're like self-critiquing or whatnot about it, it still has some intrinsic value. Oftentimes, not always. Maybe you're a sand artist and you're cool with, you know, the temporary nature of all things. But From what I've seen, and I have, and have been part of, I mean, like, yeah, you make your comic and you wonder why there isn't the traffic, right? Or why, you know, I've made my comic, made my book. Why am I not getting the sales? And it's tough to start exploring that. Or if you even are open to exploring it.
Well, yeah, this is another thing that I forgot to put in the show notes. I'm putting it in the links in the Google Doc to be included in the show notes. And it's been a while since we mentioned a 5x5 podcast. We're just going to throw out a whole bunch of videos and podcasts to listen to besides ours. The crossover, episode 8, Speaking Up. I don't know if you listened to that one. The crossover is sort of like all of the different hosts from all the different 5x5 shows get together every once in a while and talk about whatever. And so sometimes it'll be about like raising children, and other times, like in this case, episode 8, it was about online cyberbullying and harassment, and it's two women.
Yes, I have. That was awesome.
It was a great episode. Yep. But one of the women on the show was a user experience designer, and one of the things that she said that helped her to deal with some people who were really trying to make her life a hell. And she said that my job as a user experience designer is to have empathy and understand other people's points of view. And so when I applied that to my situation, it helped make it more bearable, even though it's still very difficult. And I thought of you, and I thought, yeah, you know, Rob's occupation, what he's doing night and day, is putting himself in other people's shoes. And I think that's a good lesson to walk away with when we're talking about this whole idea of tribes and like, oh, this is like high school. You know what? It's like high school for everybody else too. And if we monitor our own behavior and look at our own behavior and look at our own work from somebody else's standpoint, or try to, then it might make this whole endeavor of trying to find where we belong a little bit more endurable, right?
Yeah.
And did I say things? I don't know if I did.
You said awesome things. We could have just stopped recording right there.
I need acknowledgement, Rob.
You do. And I do too, Jersey. Darn it. If I had an echo effect, though, it just like, that's it. That would, it, you know, your sentence would have ended and you know, your voice would have trailed off, and that would be a punctuating moment. It's very much similar to, now put yourself into whatever, you're your parents and you've moved to a new town. And, you know, so there's so much complexity as far as the different groups that are available, the things you recognize, the things you miss, the things, and it takes that ongoing effort to be able to find that external and internal connection. Awareness of your own work, awareness of who do you want to bring your work to, how do they see it, and even then, so you may discover tons of different complexities there, because you may find out, oh, funny, this the thing I was making is appealing to people that I don't really want to serve, or you know, I don't want to, but then I find a way to connect because, you know, I'm paying the bills and I'm going to use this experience to transition to my next thing, right?
Yeah.
Because, yeah, there's a lot of, not a lot of absolute there where.
Yeah. Well, I think we walked around that one, but this next, I want to get to the last part before we get to quests. But this is totally related to the main body of the topic, but I'm still going to go ahead and separate it out with some transition music, because I like using it. This is a little wake-up call for everybody watching or listening. Something cool is going to happen. So, okay. The first part of this episode, we talked about, you know, finding your place, finding the group, searching. And part of the searching, there's a intrinsic anxiety in that. To be in quest, to be in search of something, there is, you know, baked into that a kind of anxiety, and different people respond to anxiety different ways. Now, Kazu Kibuishi, Bolt City on Twitter, is somebody that anybody who is interested in the creative arts should follow. And when I say follow, I don't even mean you don't have to engage with him. You don't have to engage in trade. Just listen to the guy, because he posts a lot of tweets that are really, really thoughtful little, you know, haikus on being a creative person, things worth considering. And I have yet to see him pump out something where I feel like that's half-baked thinking. It's always like I look at him, I'm like, God, that guy really thinks his stuff through. And he whopped me upside the head with a paddle with one of his latest ones, because it reminded me of a personal experience where I failed. And I failed bad. I crashed and burned. I don't think I talked about this on the show before. But so Kazu throws this on Twitter. Do you want to read it, Rob? Go ahead and read it.
So, quote, spend time preparing for an opportunity and less time looking for one. Nothing worse than getting a chance at something without being prepared.
Oh, man. That is truth. it gets me. It just, I love how it flips this whole concept of, it's like, well, you know, the internet's blown off all the doors and all the opportunities are there, but you just got to go out and quest for them. But there's also such a thing as, this is another old, tired, doggy or careworn expression, is being prepared for success. When the opportunities come, and they will, if you put yourself out there and you engage with trade with people, the opportunities will present themselves, and then that's the test. It's not how well you hunted, but when the game is there, how do you pounce on that opportunity, right? And I've got an example of how I failed that I want to share with everybody. I think this is the first time I've talked about this publicly. So I was at ALA Anaheim last year. I go to an after party, and it's full of cartoonists and publishers and agents. Very exciting. And get this, I'm a pretty easygoing, upbeat, outgoing guy. But there I was in the corner with my wife. We had our drinks, and we're just looking around like this. Like, I don't know anybody. Do you know anybody? No, I don't know anybody. Well, let's just talk together and look like we're having a good time. Maybe somebody will think that we look like fun people, you know? Because it's hard to go. You don't go walking up into somebody like, what's going on over here, right?
You know, some people do. And some people do that in the right place, the right time, all the time. Yeah. And curse them.
Yeah. they are what we call charming.
That is fun.
But anyway, so I wind up talking with this agent. And she says, and she's asking me questions about myself. And I'm telling her about my work. She's like, oh my gosh, did you know that an editor from this publishing house that you really want to work for is right over there? And I'm going to introduce you right now. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. And so she takes me over to this editor. The editor says, oh yeah, do introductions, tell her a little bit about myself and my work. And she says, well, are you agented? And I had just gotten an agent, just like, you know, weeks before. I knew his name, but I did not take time to memorize the name of his agency. And it's the complicated reasons behind that, but the gist of, or the moral of the story is that what I should have done is known this guy's agency name. I should have had it memorized by then, right? But it was kind of on the back of my mind. I was doing a bunch of other things in the prep for the trip, and it wasn't at the front of my mind when it should have been, knowing that I was going to a library conference, right? And so I go, oh, his name is X, and he works for, and I'm like, I could look it up, and I pull up my phone, and she's like, well, he must be great if you don't even remember what his agency is. And I was like, oh, it's over. It's over.
She just provided you the evidence. She's like, this is what I expect in my tribe.
Yep.
And
I failed miserably. And that was a mental note, right? Like, I knew, like, after this, I'm going to make sure that I have that information at the ready all times. And I was reminded of Kazu's thing here with being prepared for the opportunities rather than searching for the opportunities, right? Let's be less anxious about trying to make those connections and have our ducks in a row, have our work developed for when those opportunities arise.
Yeah, I mean, it's really, as you said, Kazu, I mean, he practically tweets poetry, because I can't really think of a counterpoint to this, because he even says less time looking for one. He doesn't say don't look for one.
Right.
It's so easy to jump to the opposite, to the binary, you know, the inverse of this thing. And no, he's just saying less time. Practice, get ready. Be ready and look.
Yeah.
And that's very interesting. Because I feel like I've had the habit sometimes of, okay, so let's say you really practice and enjoy analyzing others' perspectives and walking in other shoes. Let's just say. And let's say you characterize what you want to accomplish a lot and then break it down and practice the things that go into accomplishing the thing. And then you keep doing that for a very long time. And then you don't reach out. Not often. How about ever? Until finally starting to make a webcomic in 2008. Oops. Yeah.
You're talking about a friend.
I'm saying this for a friend. Anyway, there's another extreme on that. And so, and funny, because of our own, whatever, you get biases from bumps and scars and past experiences, right? And so even with that filter, I look at this thing and it's like, you know, he's got a really good even perspective here. He's not saying over prepare.
Right.
I know folks that over prepare.
And I know some fellas who under prepare and just leap in going like, it'll be okay. And then they get there and go, oh no, oh no, no, no. And they look like a Chris Farley character falling on the table.
Okay.
So yeah, but this idea of, okay, so I'm gonna map this onto some old careworn advice is that, you know, when we talk about building trust, we talk about, like, you know, before you and beyond looking for cues, but being able to say, I'm a cartoonist. And then the next question is, oh, what do you do? Oh, I do a bunch of drawings of Batman on my Tumblr page, right? Well, that counts, but there's, in my tribe or whoever you're talking to, you got to think about what, when they throw that word cartoonist on there, or artist, or UI, UX designer, musician, name your art form. Everybody's going to have their own picture in their head of what that means, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Like game designer, game developer.
Yeah. Or, I mean, like even in comics, like, I had a friend who was remarking on some popular children's books, and they're like, the art's so sloppy and it's so loose and there's no backgrounds in it. And I'm like, well, what do you like? And they're like, well, I like Green Lantern because there's like a lot of backgrounds. There's a lot of detail. I'm like, well, but look at the intended audience here. Right. And he's like, yeah, but this is comics. And he holds up his Green Lantern. Right. This is comic. That's not comics so much. Right. And I'm like, oh, no. They're both comics. But anyway, I'm saying,
I love this.
What?
It's shared language. Shared. Yeah. We abuse each other's language. That's what we do a lot, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that same word means two completely different things.
Yep. So
wild. Yeah.
So okay. So like this idea of preparing is like knowing, really, like picturing your head where you want to land. Like what's the outcome? What's the outcome? You start to engage in talking with this group of people. What do you want out of that? And what, like you said, what are their shared values and what do they project? And then if that's where you want to be, then prepare yourself for that by creating work in that. Not in that, don't copy, but you know what I'm saying? It's like create work that speaks to those ethics, shared aesthetics, goals, principles, and so on. And put some work in so that when you do say, hey, I'm an X, whatever you are, right? And they say, oh, really? What have you done? You point to a thing and they can recognize it. Right? And that's preparation. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to be vague here because I'm not just trying to be prescriptive and say like, oh, well, you got to do X amount of webcomic updates on X amount of schedule in order to achieve an audience and then be worthy of inclusion into such and such. And you have to do this many comics and get this many audiences before you make this many t-shirts and then you get a Cintiq.
Yeah. I have that tattooed right here. It barely fit on my arm.
The 10 principles of Robdom.
Yeah, exactly. And I totally lost where I was going.
Sorry,
dang funny. No worries. Continue.
It's the idea is the metaphor I came up with in the notes was like keeping your creative guns loaded, right? So, and you made the comparison. You coined the term "the soldier of creative fortune." Rob Stedzinger, soldier of creative fortune. Well, if you're going to be a soldier of creative fortune, then make sure that you're not going into, you know, a gunfight with a knife. You prepare for these things, right? And so, and this means, like, this preparation can be knowing the people you're going to engage with as much as preparing materials, right? So, for instance, when I went to this party, I did not know who I was going to meet there. I was like, oh, the party, comics people, sounds fun, comics, I like it. And I just went, right, without stopping to go, oh, who's going to be there? What's the general idea of what kind of different groupings am I going to meet? Oh, are there going to be publishers there? I didn't know that. I better sit down and think about what would I need to know if I'm going to start talking with publishers and have opportunities possibly arise. I didn't do that prep. I just went going, oh, comics. And I paid the price.
It's essentially preparing for the kind of things you want to see happen, right? And the in the preparing, you can start to make it more likely where you can bring it about. And I think in and then if that is part of what you want to have happen is connect with a certain tribe, you're going to find a good match when you are producing the kind of evidence that that tribe is looking for. Mm-hmm. And then you need to have some kind of feedback loop to be discovering that. If you don't, I mean, maybe you have it already figured out or what have you, and essentially the evidence is, you know what, I don't care, my comic has a huge audience and makes money, huge audience makes money, huge audience makes money, XKCD, right? What do you say about rendering? What do you say about it? Doesn't matter to my tribe. Right. And I think that's awesome. Like, what and that's where you get into this criteria of different groups care about.
Yeah.
It was interesting. The art, I'm just stepping back to art and story, actually. Kind of out of nowhere, kind of not. But it was obvious that, like, there's a lot of shared bias in that culture toward line quality, you know? Just one thing that there was a common value in that tribe is line quality. And, yeah. You know, I certainly practice some more with that. Just
you're
because.
Right. You're right. Now that I think about it, there was a lot of discussions on that topic. Both Mark and I were fascinated by what line quality did. Mm-hmm. I like to think that I was more on the theoretical side of it in terms of, like, not being prescriptive in terms of, like, you have to do this with lines. But we spent a lot of time talking about it. That's for sure. And then when Kevin got involved, they just got even more into that because Kevin and Mark were both, like, serious brush inkers, still are. And I was back then addicted to the crow quill, and we would battle it out, you know, and the crow quill's better for these reasons. Oh, this is what artists talk about, you know?
Which is awesome, but it's a perfect example.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. And so if you're looking for it, you then, you know, like, oh, okay, cool. You tune into that aesthetic. Whereas I would bet right now somewhere there is a comic life slash meme comics, whatever, like, yeah, those certain faces.
Oh, the rage faces?
Rage faces and all that kind of stuff. There's apps that help generate that, but I bet there's aficionados of this, and I bet these aficionados get together and have ways to recognize one another, their excellence. Like, what do they value? What's excellent to them?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. I keep bringing it back around to that.
Well, no, I think that's a good thing to underline. I think we did a decent job of walking around this curveball. I mean, we gave it over entirely to the curveball, but that's why I like them, because sometimes they can completely hijack or hack the class, as it were. And mm-hmm. Nothing is more exciting to me than when a student asks, like, and I'm not saying in this particular situation that Lee is a student, but I'm using my classroom experiences as a metaphor for this, is like, when I'm in my classroom and a student asks me a really interesting question that takes me in a completely different place where I intended to go, that's the best.
Exactly. We get to this is what we get to carry with us as soldiers of creative fortune. We've just made up new gadgets that we get to draw upon.
Awesome. Okay. Well, with that, I'm going to go ahead and do the transition music for the quest. Is that cool?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Quest time.
All right. So quests, the lean into our quest. We took a break from it last week and last episode. So we're going every other week with these. So what they are is essentially a mini challenge. It's something to get your hands on that's outside of the norm from whatever your current grind is for your creative projects and your day job or whatever. And hopefully it's a little bit fun, a little bit difficult. And if you're addicted to that, you can crank up the difficulty. Feel free. I've heard these can take a little bit long if you get caught in that.
Yeah.
But essentially it's a mini challenge. And when you you take on a quest, you post a link to what you did, and essentially post a link to Twitter with the hashtag #LeahQuest, in this case 6. And, it surfaces on the leanintoart.com website in the right column. And of course we all notice it and we can comment and stay tuned with what one another's doing. And, I know one of the fun things in these quests is seeing what others do.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. We've talked about that. Was it last episode when we were doing the reviews of, Lucas's and Lee's and I forget. Yes. Everybody else who participated, but yeah, there was a lot of good discussion on the quest last time. So what do you got for us this time, Rob?
Well, okay, so we already reviewed the prior quest, so we don't have one of those to cover right now, but the new quest, Lean Into Our Quest 6, is called An A-Team of Your Own. So
speaking of soldiers of creative fortune.
Exactly. Isn't that awesome? A sort of accidental tie-in. Serendipity in action. So here's the quest. You have been chosen by a very powerful secret organization to assemble a team of heroes from any story in any genre in any media. Choose from the following scenarios as the reason you're recruiting the team. And then in order to accomplish the quest, list the members and your reason for choosing them. So this is a writing quest if you want to take the basic quest. And then describe what you expect the team to do. Like, what do you think they're going to win? Do you think they're going to lose? And what's the outcome of it?
Ooh, that's, and then finally, pick a team to lose.
Yeah. So you could, not to go overly complicated with, but you can totally do that. But then, and this could tie into the final observation is, why are they a good team to tell a story about? So in this case, if you're role-playing the character, you're reporting on the mission then, and or writing your tell-all memoir of the mission.
Yeah.
And the heroic quest is to draw your team.
Oh. How many people are on this team?
I left it open. Okay. I was debating. What's that?
More than one then.
More than one, exactly. So it could be just a pair. I'm going to say, here's where you could crank the difficulty on yourself.
Try
to, but, think storytelling limitations and whatnot. So it's probably less than an army.
So what would be the deadline on this one? Let's see.
Yes.
The next Lean Into Art cast will be April 25th. So 25th. April 24th will be the deadline if you want us to discuss it on the show. Right?
Cool. Exactly. So an A team of your own and some scenarios. Here we go. Let's get to the scenarios. Okay. You're gathering them to scenario one, save the Earth from a hostile extraterrestrial armada with hundreds of thousands of powerful ships and soldiers. Number two, to train a plucky young hero so they may win a multi-skill tournament against incredibly skilled, powerful opponents. Number three, to rescue a good giant who's fallen under a spell to attack an innocent village. Number four, to pull off a rare jewel heist from an eccentric, wealthy wormhole tycoon's asteroid.
A wormhole tycoon?
Yeah.
I guess that'd be like an oil baron in science fiction world, wouldn't it?
It's totally. And I'm borrowing it from the the Commonwealth Saga from Peter F. Hamilton in a way, right? Okay. So I do. I love that series. So anyway, but I've actually, he's never referred to as a wormhole tycoon, but he pretty much is, in my opinion. Yeah. And then last, but not least, is to solve an international suspense whodunit mystery.
Mm. Cool. So, sounds like you got a pretty wide variety of genres there to choose from.
Exactly. So like, I mean, if you got a hero, you know, any, they can range from any different genre and then could get mismatched with another genre, or you can pluck from all sorts of different genres. So make a team.
Cool. Very cool. Okay. So, and then did you share a link to whatever you post? You post it on mm-hmm. Tumblr, on Facebook, on, you know, Twitter, wherever. But whatever you do, in order to let us know about it, you got to post to Twitter with the Lean Into our LIA Quest 6 tag. Mm-hmm. And like yes. Rob said, it will show up in the sidebar on leanintoart.com, and we will be alerted to its presence. And then we will be able to collect these quests and report on them, respond to them, and critique them on the next show. So it sounds like a fun one, Rob, but it sounds like one that can easily spiral out into a 3-hour activity if you're not careful.
Exactly. So some advice for those who may be prone to that: keep the team small and keep your answers short. You know what? Like every one of these bullet points, make it a tweet, yeah. Make it a tweet in length, and then you're golden. Hopefully. I mean, tweets can take a while to edit, you know, yeah. but what's that? Yeah. Or do you get caught in editing your tweets ever?
No, I just know you do.
Oh yeah. Yes, I do.
I know you're speaking from pained experience.
Mm. Darn those elements of style.
Okay, well, cool. Well, Rob, I think we pulled this one together.
Cool. Yeah. Thanks, Jersey. I think we did too. Yeah. Thank you very much, for the curveball, Lee.
Yeah, so that was at twitter.com/controlaltlee. And the show will be archived at leanintoart.com. Do check out leanintoart.com/workshops if you want to dig deeper into this creative storytelling stuff. We got a whole bunch of different classes that you can take, time-shifted video classes that you can download and use at your convenience. And there's no DRM. The download link doesn't expire. So, and every purchase gets you 12 hours of bonus content with me and Rob doing all sorts of different creative lab exercises. Really awesome stuff like automating your workflow, improvising story ideas, all the stuff you've come to enjoy on the Lean Into Art Show, but in more depth and more detail and longer. So, did I miss anything? Oh, hey, I want to throw out a link. I'll put it in the show notes. I did a post on Google Plus of my top three apps for drawing on the Galaxy Note 10.1 because I've been getting asked about it a lot. And so I wrote up a little review of Papyrus and Layer Paint and Photoshop Touch. And people called me out saying, well, what about Sketchbook Pro? I explained the reasons why I don't like to use Sketchbook Pro, but I like to use these other ones. It's at google.com/plusjerseydrows if you want to find my feed, but I'll link to it in the show notes. But yeah, we need to do some more follow-up on the Lean Into Art cast about these Galaxy Note things that we got.
Yeah, good point.
Go in a little bit more detail on how we've been using them and what use cases we've found for them.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I've been using it more and more in my day job and all that as well. So,
until next time, everybody, we'll be back, like I said, on April 25th at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll see you then. I've been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on the Twitters.
And I've been Rob Stenzinger of leanintoart.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Oh, you know what? I was just about to say, okay, bye.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot to pull up my thing.
Oh,
and here there we go. It is. Little bit. We're getting there, guys. Here we go. 1, 2, 3. Okay, bye.
Show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoart.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user LeanIntoArt, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.
We got a question.
Oh, yeah. What's up?
Lee is asking, is this quest using original characters or like a fan crossover?
I'm fan crossovering all over the place on this one.
Okay.
Yeah. This is, yeah, I mean, you feel free. Like, it's not limited. That's the intent. It's unlimited. You could bring your characters with others' characters. You can go exclusively one direction or the other across any genre, any medium. You could have Buffy the Vampire Slayer as played by Sarah Michelle Gellar fighting alongside Goku, for instance.
Yep.
With Rick Hunter and a Veritech fighter alongside them. I don't know why I would, you know, just for example.
Example. And that'll be at leanintoart.com/quests, which we should have said in the show. I'm going to leave this all in.
Awesome. Bonus. Okay.
Bonus. Bonus if you stick around after the music. Okay. Well, I'm going to shut off the stream, everybody. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. Thanks for participating in the chat. And we'll see you guys in 2 weeks on the Lean Into Art show.
Cool. Thank you, everybody.
Broadcast has been successfully terminated. Oh, I might want to stop recording too.
Oh.